And with that successful landing of Gemini 6, we come now to the reason for this broadcast, the landing and recovery of Gemini 7 in some 50 minutes from now. Bill?
Well, let's call in correspondent Robert Large, who is back from Cape Kennedy. You're in the studio with us. You'll be handling our reports from the carrier WASP in the recovery area. Bob, any late reports from the WASP?
Yes, Bill. The primary recovery zone for the Gemini 7 spacecraft is essentially the same area in the western Atlantic as it was for the Gemini 6 recovery on Thursday. That's about 900 kilometers southwest of the island of Bermuda and about 1,100 kilometers east-southeast of Cape Kennedy. I believe on Wednesday, they were about 515 nautical miles from Bermuda, and today they are 490 nautical miles, so they seem to be a little bit closer to Bermuda. Again, we are able to watch on our television monitors here in the studio via the communication satellite Early Bird just what is happening on the aircraft carrier WASP, the primary recovery ship, and those pictures are very clear. Broadcasting from the carrier are correspondents for the broadcast pool, organized by all the independent American broadcasting networks. And just a few minutes ago, we recorded this situation report from correspondent Bernard Eisman aboard the aircraft carrier WASP.
The WASP is on station, and NASA and Navy officers aboard say everything is ready for the recovery of the Gemini 7 spacecraft, and astronauts James Lovell and Frank Borman at 9:05 Eastern Time this morning. The ship beamed to final station of the record-breaking 18-day-long flight early this morning and is now standing by 600 nautical miles east-southeast of Cape Kennedy, 490 miles southwest of Bermuda. Pilots and plane crews aboard are waiting, and the aircraft, fixed-wing, and helicopters are in position on the flight deck. The first aircraft will be launched approximately 50 minutes before Gemini 6 goes to the splash point, the remainder 30 minutes before estimated landing time. The ship's sick bay has been turned into a space medicine center with a dozen doctors and technicians standing by, ready to start the exhaustive tests so planned for the astronauts. Each man will undergo about 9.5 hours of medical testing, starting minutes after recovery. Bernard Eisman aboard the WASP.
I think correspondent Bernard Eisman is a little excited. One of us heard him say 18-day flight, and of course he must have been referring to the 14-day flight of the Gemini 7. Now we can see on our television monitor that the first planes and the helicopters that will hover over the spacecraft until it is hoisted aboard the ship are now being deployed from the deck of the aircraft carrier WASP. Bill McCrory?
Well, Bob, we'll be coming back to you often, particularly during the last stages of the this broadcast, once the spacecraft, the Gemini 7, has hit the
beautiful picture on television, and of course Thursday was the first time ever that they broadcast live on television here in the United States the recovery of astronauts. Today will be the second time, and speaking of beautiful pictures, yesterday here in the United States they showed in color on television the rendezvous of Gemini's 7 and 6, and some of the most beautiful, fascinating pictures anyone would ever want to see anywhere, I think.
Yes, indeed, Harold. We should mention for our listeners, too, that the Boeing circuits
to the carrier WASP also are being relayed by the communication satellite, which makes the reports much clearer on the local broadcast.
We have some listeners, you know, we've overlooked here, Bill. You do the honor.
All right, and that is our NASA expert, our aerospace scientist, who is going to be with us today, Mr. Edward Harkleroad. Ed, after our experience on Thursday with a perfect landing in the West Atlantic, I almost said Pacific, in the West Atlantic, how do you look toward the landing and recovery today?
Well, we're very hopeful that the landing today will even be better than the landing 2 days ago. We have every indication that it will come off real well.
Well, thanks, Ed, and we'll be coming back to you often for some of your expert advice and corrections of our errors as we go along through this broadcast.
We're standing by for the firing of the retro rockets in 9 minutes and 20-something seconds from now as the spacecraft moves up over Canton Island in just a few minutes. The spacecraft Gemini 7 has just passed the continent of Australia in the southwest Pacific, moving in a northwesterly direction. The retro rockets are scheduled to be fired at about 13 hours, 28 minutes, Greenwich Mean Time. There is no announcement from Gemini Control at this moment, but we understand that Bob Lodge would be monitoring a report from the carrier Wasp from Bernard Eisman. Bob, do you have anything from downrange there?
Well, Bill, right now, just as you began to speak, we heard Bernard Eisman say that those planes are now being deployed from the deck of the aircraft carrier. And that is about all he has to report right about now.
What is the scene down at Houston as we come to the end of this 14-day flight, of this dual mission of Gemini 6 and Gemini 7? I imagine there are a lot of rather tired people, but I suppose rather happy, too.
Well, they're very happy, Bill, as you can well imagine. Last night, in a nearby restaurant, Mr. Chris Kraft, the flight director, and his wife, Dr. Charles Ferry, the chief surgeon, and his wife were at a dinner at which they were quite relaxed and preparing for this return to Earth this morning with Frank Bowman and Jim Lovell. The scene here in Houston, the weather is bad. It's been raining for the last 3 days, and it's just not quite dawn yet here in Houston. Maybe the weather is making it less dawn than it would be otherwise. And for the last 2 or 3 hours, the automobiles have been screening into Mission Control Center as the change of shift is coming about, and new controllers and others at the Manned Spacecraft Center are coming to work early to assist this re-entry of Gemini 7.
While we're waiting here for the announcement of the retrofire, let me ask Ed Harperold, and you come in too if you will, to describe for us the sequence of events
when we get to the point of retrofire.
Ed?
Retrofire will occur at 1328 Greenwich Mean Time at about 1349 or 21 minutes later. We will reach 100,000 meters on our path down. At 1352, we will start blackout, where there will be no communications with the spacecraft that we will be able to pick up from the ground. At 1357, the end of blackout will occur. At 1359, the drogue chute, or the small parachute that comes out to slow down the spacecraft, will occur. And about 17,000 meters.
Let's go to Mission Control now for Alstroy Houston with
329 hours into the continent into the flight. We've had no additional conversation.
One to two.
Since
they left Australia.
And we're in a situation similar to that. Remarkable reality. We're still going over the all the badgers have been checked and rechecked. We feel they're accurate. This is, it was the case the other day. We now feel that it's up to Frank and Jim. The maneuver is done on board, and we will, of course, do anything possible if they come across. If they need any additional values, they will be available, but they already have manual backup angles which they can use if necessary. This is Gemini Control, Houston.
Those retro rockets will be fired in just 5 minutes, 16 seconds from now. And the position over the Earth, at which point this is scheduled to be done, is about 11 degrees north, 176 degrees west. That's just north of Canton Island, as the spacecraft is moving in a northeasterly direction toward Hawaii. It'll go right over Hawaii just 5 minutes after the retro rockets are fired.
You say about 5 minutes before retrofire, and we do want to get back to you before we'll record in the report of Gemini control on that. Suppose we switch very quickly now for a brief beginning with retrofire in the reentry of the Gemini 7. Ed, perhaps we can pick up again with that.
I believe we were just at the point of deploying the drogue chute at the time that we were cut off.
That's the small chute.
That's the small chute that slows down the spacecraft so that the main chute can open up without too great an opening shock and causing too many perturbations on the spacecraft itself. That will occur at 1359, at about 14,000 meters above the surface of the Earth. The main chute will open at 1400 hours, and that will be about 3,000 meters, and then splash down will occur at 1405.
And we're going to have to interrupt again and go back to Houston. There's just a little over a minute until retrofire. Brett?
Yes, Gemini Control is about to come to us again with another report. I believe we are 1 minute and 4 seconds from retrofire right now. Here is Paul Haney.
This is Gemini Control, Houston. Kent Nolan acquired the spacecraft about 30 seconds ago. And Elliot C. has established voice communications with Frank Borman. He advised that he is cleared for retrofire. Catlin should hold the spacecraft in contact for some 7 to 8 minutes. And there'll be a 2 to 3 minute gap between there and Hawaii. Hawaii should hold them for 5 to 6 minutes.
Eighteen seconds. 15. 10 seconds.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Retrofire.
These are the solid propellant rockets. There are four of them. First, fire one. About now, fire two. About now, fire three.
All quiet on the line.
And about now, fire four.
Borman confirms retros have fired.
Spacecraft Gemini 7.
Four retros fired.
Spacecraft Gemini 7. No,
he says we're standing by for IVIs. Let's listen as Frank Borman calls it out.
Borman talking to Elliot C. Jettison to retro package, he said. Jettison to retro package, he said. Meaning that they have released the...
27, Houston, would you confirm the IVI readouts again?
The IVI instruments on board the spacecraft. The incremental velocity.
And they're right on the nominal. They brought some big smiles here in the control center. This is Chris Kraft, Deke Slayton, and others standing here monitoring this conversation.
Jim Lovell's voice is a little higher pitched than it has been throughout the flight because now they're in those final, very important moments. Frank Borman normally has a little higher pitch than James Lovell. And we have been able to understand the difference between the two quite easily up to this.
At the time of retrofire, it would have been about 157 miles high. At a point on the equator about 3,000 east southeast, 3,000 miles east southeast of the Philippines. They're due to reach 400 miles of the ship mark. At 49 and a half minutes after the hour, at that time they'll be over the Rio Grande River, about 300 miles northwest of Monterrey, Mexico. The blackout period will begin at 52 minutes, 42 minutes after the hour. Elliot C. is engaging in a little facetious questioning of Seven. He's asked him if the Delta P lights were out. Of course, the adapter section with those fuel cells left the spacecraft just prior to retrofire. And Borman confirms that, in fact, the Delta P lights, which have been on most of the period of this 14-day flight, are indeed out.
The spacecraft, at the time of retrofire, about 2 days
after the blackout, at 57 minutes 45 seconds after the hour, and our lane was put in a call with 7. Let's listen.
Was that what it was, the retrofire?
Doctor, copy.
What's the rest of it?
Okay, come to your left and you're down at retrofire.
Okay, copy that. How are you doing?
Okay, out of
touch.
Copy it. I think you're out of touch.
I don't know.
Manual retro.
I don't know.
All this goes fine
normally?
Okay, very good.
Kindell there, talking to Borman in the spacecraft as it moves up over Hawaii, 290 kilometers above the Earth still. It takes some 36 minutes from the moment of retrofire until the spacecraft splashes into the air. That was Hawaii again. And we'll try to relay or interpret the messages we hear from Jim Lovell and Frank Parker in the spacecraft. Now 5 minutes, 30 seconds.
Central AOS and LOS main, please.
That's Chris Kraft asking Hawaii for some information about acquisition by radios and radars of the spacecraft as it moves over Hawaii.
Rings out the forward nose of the section. Why he wraps up his summary by saying he's looking real good. And in some 6 minutes, we should acquire the spacecraft via Guaymas, Mexico, as it begins to slip down over the states.
That means it's going to travel across. From Hawaii to near Guaymas, Mexico, out to the sea there, since the radio does reach out that far, about 1,000 feet. In 6 minutes, Guaymas gets acquisition. In other words, when they pick up the spacecraft on radar and radio, I'm sure we'll hear another announcement from control. The spacecraft now passing Hawaii, moving out of range as it crosses the Pacific. Now about 30 minutes until splashdown in the Atlantic. Yes, Bill.
Brett Turner, we have a brief report from the recovery ship. If we could break in at this time, Bob Lodd.
About 5 or 6 minutes ago, just about the time of retrofire, we got this report from our second pool correspondent aboard the aircraft carrier Wasp, Dallas Townsend. Let's hear that report.
Pretty quiet has descended on the flight deck of the carrier Wasp after the organized pandemonium a few moments ago when the first of the Wasp's aircraft began leaving the deck. Right now, ready to warm up and then to take off is the prime recovery helicopter number 56 that is piloted by Commander Norman during helicopter squadron 11. Also on deck is the backup helicopter number 57 in the GT6 recovery global program. Also on deck waiting to take off is the photo helicopter number 60. A few minutes ago, the last of the first wave of aircraft left the deck. That included Air Boss 1 and 2, Air Boss 1 being Commander David Barksdale, the on-scene commander. Also, three rear radio relay planes. Those are single engine Douglas, the Sky Raiders, and three search helicopters, 1, 2, and 3, which will take the area once the spacecraft has hit the water.
And that's our latest report from the aircraft carrier WASP. Some of the search planes have been launched. He's referred to two Airbuses. These are the two overflyers who are in charge of the search planes in a certain area. And these Airbuses are the Airbus flying overhead when they achieve contact with the spacecraft after it splashes down. Between him and the commander of the spacecraft, Frank Borman, will be made the decision as to whether or not the astronauts will emerge from the spacecraft and be hoisted aboard the helicopters, or whether, as was the case with the Gemini 6 crew, they will stay aboard the spacecraft until the spacecraft is hoisted aboard the ship. This is a decision that will be made at the time, will it not, Mr. Huckleberg?
No, that is correct. This is always a real-time decision. Simply because no other people can really establish a firm procedure to be followed prior to this point in time.
Mr. Huckleberg, I want to ask you something about landing procedure on the Gemini flights versus the Mercury flights. Have there been changes even within the Gemini flights themselves? There certainly have since Mercury. Could you tell us a little about them?
Yes, we're always attempting to improve the re-entry, landing procedures, and this is just very typical of any development program. I'm not overly familiar with the Mercury procedures, so I'll have to beg off on that question, I'm afraid.
Well, Hal, you know, when they do splash down, the Gemini 7 spacecraft will have flown some 8,500,000 kilometers. I suppose that would be more distance than all of the other
American together.
Flights actually passed all of the Americans put together, Mark, yesterday afternoon sometime.
Yeah. I hope Brett Turner is down with us now.
Yes, Bill, right here.
Anything further from the Gemini Control, Russ?
Well, we're still waiting for an acquisition by Guaymas, which will be coming up in about one more minute from now.
That's Guaymas.
That's the Guaymas tracking station. And as it passes the California Gulf there, below the United States, Mexico, and as you heard Mr. Haney say, at 49 minutes past the hour, which would be about 9 minutes from now, as we move it across Mexico, we will begin that very, very entry phase, at which point the spacecraft
Okay,
talking about the vehicle control system.
Roger.
Yes,
sir.
The gas
is holding real good. Your main bus voltage is reading 23.8, real fine.
23.8 volts. In other words,
and
you won't see the moves across the United States. That's what that meant. Was Ed Sundell in Hawaii talking to both the spacecraft and to Chris Kraft, chief flight director here in Houston? Let's stand by.
This is Gemini Control Houston at 330 hours, 13 minutes into the flight. That wrapped up the Hawaii conversation. Within a minute or two, we should have acquisition log wireless. Present altitude down to about 85 miles. Still acquisition at Guaymas. It is due at 44 minutes, 50 seconds.
Spacecraft now down 160 kilometers above the Earth as it's beginning its descent while still moving east at very high speed. In 1 minute from now, we should have acquisition by the Guaymas tracking station, meaning that at that point, radars will be locked in and there will be voice contact again with Gemini 7 as it's moving east. We're standing by here in Houston with Paul Haney, the voice of Gemini Control, and in Washington with Bill McCrory, Al Banks, and Ed Harkavelt. Gentlemen?
And Bob Lodge, who is tucked neatly away in the corner here, listening to the activities from the WASP, and Bob will be reporting to us in quite a bit of detail after the actual splashdown. I was talking to Mr. Harkavelt just a moment ago about the speed of the ship at this point and how that speed is affected by retrofire. Maybe you can tell the audience what you told me.
Well, the spacecraft was traveling about 28,000 meters per second.
Per hour,
I believe. Per hour. Okay, well, I'll get on track here in a minute. About 28,000.
California has acquired. He's advised the flight director that everything looks good on the ground. There's been no voice conversation.
California acquires before Guaymas, I just noticed here by our map. That's because the station is located at a more westerly longitude. But since the spacecraft is going almost over the Guaymas station, they're depending on it for primary contact.
Guaymas Capcom is just a milestone. They're ready to pick a blood pressure reading off the pilot, Jim Lovell. And Lovell apparently isn't quite ready to give him the blood pressure reading.
That seems a little funny at this point, doesn't it? Taking blood pressure.
Well, I suppose that it is very important.
If it's anything like Thursday, our blood pressure is going to be up.
I wonder what it was at this point for all of us here. Well, before you were so rudely interrupted by us, Mr. Harkle,
is advising 7 that he should observe a lit horizon at 61 nautical miles.
That'll be just before they go into the blackout period.
And at that time, he will be coming over Monterrey, Mexico, just passing Monterrey, Mexico, north of the Rio Grande.
How long are they in the communications blackout?
Only about 4 minutes. It's a very short period. It's a tense period, and of course, I hear him taking a breath there. I thought. I believe he will interrupt us at any time, incidentally. We're always letting Gemini Control come right in here as we conduct these conversations. This blackout period is the time at which the spacecraft is going through the intense heat of several thousand degrees Fahrenheit.
And this this ionized plasma sheath builds up around the spacecraft and prevents radio waves from coming in. Mr. Harker Road, you were there. We have 28,000
meters per hour. We'll try again. Well, the retro rockets reduce the speed of the spacecraft about 400 meters per hour.
So it's not a very great reduction.
Down to about 24 then.
No, about 27.6.
I beg your pardon, yes.
And then there's very little speed reduction until we hit this 400,000 feet or 130,000 kilometers.
The residue of the atmosphere.
That's right. When we hit the atmosphere, then the speed is reduced, and eventually, of course, we come down to, I think that the speed of the spacecraft just before it touches the water is about 30 feet per second or 10 meters. So there is quite a fantastic reduction in speed in a 10-minute period.
And this is all done by the Earth's atmosphere, just as a big cushion, a big, hard, fast cushion there, isn't it?
That is correct. There's no other forces acting on the spacecraft.
What are the gravity forces that they will feel, the highest gravity forces as they re-enter?
Mr. Harper, do you know?
This is Gemini Control, still on conversation. Some of the blackout times, some of the other events are being adjusted slightly. All are staying within a few seconds of the planned value. No change greater than 20 seconds. And we can hear the aircraft out in the Atlantic going through communications checks. They're blasting in here loud and clear today.
Incidentally, 30 seconds from now, Mark, is the point at which the spacecraft will pass that 400,000-foot mark and begin touching the outside extremities of the Earth's atmosphere. So this blast
out of Texas Station has been promoted. We're down over miles
altitude. It's about just over 100 kilometers, 110. 110 kilometers above the Earth.
All above, I think. And we're coming up on the 400,000-foot mark. 400,000 feet altitude with the spacecraft approximately over the Rio Grande River, 300 miles northwest of Monterrey, Mexico.
We joke with each other around here about messing up our figures, but we're dealing here in miles, in nautical miles and kilometers, and sometimes it does get a little confusing, even with charts.
I'm glad to have this slide rule here. I think that's helping a bit here. You can see all three at one glance if you can get the rules lined up properly.
We have a human slide rule here, and the person that Mr. Harker.
Glad to have that engineer.
Spacecraft now hitting that 400,000-foot mark.
In fact, it's 1 minute into it. So
the blackout has begun now.
Well, right during this blackout...
I beg your pardon. Let me correct myself. It's hitting the outside extremities of the atmosphere, and it will take about 2 minutes until the heat field builds up and it begins that. I beg your pardon, Bill.
We might suggest, while we're waiting for the communications blackout, that perhaps you could play at least a portion of an interview that you did earlier with the chief, I guess, of the recovery forces.
Bill, I wonder if it is... sort of long. I think we could go back and pick that up later, if that's all right with you.
The interview runs a little too long.
Yes. Okay. And it's about 6 minutes in duration, and we did want General Davis to hear his comments on these recovery forces and what's happening in Mission Control out. Well, there will be an interesting insight into things over there right this moment, and we can listen to that a little later, I do believe.
Well, we'll wait now for an announcement, I assume, from Gemini Control as to when we enter the blackout period.
That'll be about 1 minute, 20 seconds from now, according to my count.
Alien C is in contact with the spacecraft now. Let's try to catch the tag end of this conversation.
Just before going into blackout. Conversation.
Bank lab 35, bank right 45.
This is part of a controlled re-entry. The spacecraft is capable of
as it's coming through the atmosphere. Bank left 35 degrees, bank right 45 degrees, he's told. Frank Warner is told by Elliot C. on the ground, another astronaut.
Who will phone or rendezvous in 15 minutes.
And we're coming up on the blackout point, that point where we're about 45 miles. Altitude, we have 104 to blackout beginning here now.
About 85 kilometers above the Earth.
About 150 miles east of Houston. And this is where the velocity slumps off dramatically. They begin the blackout point. They're going moving at a velocity of over 17,000 miles an hour. And about 5.5 minutes later, they emerge from the blackout area, and their velocity has slumped down to about 5,700 miles per hour.
It's a slump, but it's still fast.
That's why those G-forces, it's like putting on the brakes.
It's fast.
You feel it, I assume, very definitely, isn't it?
5 minutes and 30 seconds, going from some 27,000 kilometers.
The next voice contact should be at a point, 300 to 400 miles south of Nassau. That's a spacecraft location point.
Red, how many?
We're due about 57 and a half minutes after the hour.
Bob Lodge, are you with us?
Yes, I was just going to ask, Red, how many G
forces did they feel on the Gemini 6 reentry on Thursday? How many times the frontal gravity?
I don't have the specific figure of that, but the Gemini forces, since they can control the reentry, they're much less than they were on the Mercury.
That's what I was going to say.
I think it was only about 4 G's, or
that's the
4 times
the force of gravity.
To use one of the terms the engineers use, that's the ballpark, about 4 G's. 4 times
the force of gravity here on Earth.
5 minutes and 30 seconds from 27,000 kilometers per hour down to about 8,500 kilometers per hour.
I believe we're getting another announcement here.
Yep, that was some of our transmissions from something else.
Bob Lodge and our correspondents down in
on the west.
We're getting a report from the WASP right now. Let's go to that live.
This carrier is steaming on station.
We're moving 18 knots. All of our aircraft are away and in position. The last of them left just about 25 minutes before estimated flash time. Rescue helicopters and the photo helicopter are orbiting the ship. The other aircraft are spread over a 40 by 200 mile zone, a zone called the Honeybee, and the area designated as the prime recovery point. We're about 600 miles due east of Miami. The ship is all ready. We are waiting to pick up the spacecraft shortly after it leaves its blackout zone. The medical teams are ready. The honor guards and firemen are ready on deck. The flagpole is busy directing its search helicopters, its search aircraft throughout the zone, waiting for a cue. Bernard Eisman aboard the WASP. And that our latest report from one of our correspondents on the aircraft carrier, where they are now prepared to...
is very tentative and very
preliminary information. Finally, early information, including the trajectory of the returning spacecraft, that would make it about 19 kilometers long or downrange, according to these preliminary reports.
Red Turner, I was talking earlier about the terrific G-forces that they're undergoing about now. Ed Harper did some quick figuring here and came up with the figure on that.
So Gemini 6,
that
would be
Stafford
and Schwab
the other day, on Thursday,
yeah. It should have been a little bit more than 5 G, well, approximately 5.25 G, that they felt on the re-entry.
Is that 5.25 times the normal force of gravity? Is that the way you...
Yes, that's correct. If a man weighs 200 pounds, then 5 times that would be...
He would... essentially be weighing 1,000 pounds.
How long is this now?
Less than a minute.
5 minutes, 30 seconds for that complete fast deceleration, but I'm sure the maximum
time is about a minute.
Directors just fired the capsule communicator, Elliot C, to start putting in some cars.
Coming up at 57 minutes after the hour.
We would expect them to emerge from this communications blackout within the minute.
And they're moving across the
Gulf of Mexico should be about now crossing the Florida Peninsula and crossing almost over Miami, Florida, and out over the Bahama Islands. This approximately, I can send one of my monitors here from Mission Control, and they are now crossing the Florida Peninsula up above it. About, he said 61 miles, that's about 85 kilometers.
I sent down all the block out in about 10 seconds.
Yeah, right.
Well, what station will pick them up?
They're now in, as soon as they come out of the blackout, about four of the tracking stations can,
Germany 7 has come through at 57 minutes, 45 seconds after the hour, and the WASP is following Germany 7 on radar.
Right on the button. Exactly.
That's the rate. Frank Borman says we're right on nominal. Right on nominal.
Nominal or normal?
Exactly as called for. As we're sitting here, we can see this beautiful picture from the carrier. Apparently, it's a very calm day, Bob, out there, and...
I think the seas are only about 2 to 3 feet high, which is well below the minimum required.
WSC is giving 7 an update on his main and drogues. Let's listen as he passes it on.
The drogue chute should open in 1 minute.
We can see the map in the mission control center.
77 Houston, your drogue time, 3-1 plus 2-6, your main time. 3-2 plus 4-6.
I thought all my energy had been drained on Thursday, but I'm nervous again.
3-1 plus 2-6, that means 31 minutes, 26 seconds after retro fire, and that will be 30 seconds from now.
Using that term, Mark, I see you've become a real space.
Yes, maybe we can teach our listeners that, you know?
And he is showing here below 100,000. Coming up on the drogue chute point very shortly at 50,000 feet.
Let's see if we can convert that into meters in a hurry.
50,000 feet, what?
He has so far used all of ring A and about two-thirds of rung B, and there's drogue chute. It's called 59 minutes, 30 seconds after the hour.
Right on.
I'm going to call the drogue chute to Elliott C here. He was breaking up but readable for communication.
That's because they're dropping down out of range of the tracking radar is about 500 miles away, about 900.
The radar is also reading them at about 50,000 feet.
Good.
35,000 feet.
That means we're almost home, gentlemen.
Apparently, though, they're about 10 miles off for wrap. Or is that...
That was an early estimation, Bill, by trackers as the spacecraft was coming across the United States. The WASP has it, and as soon as we get accurate readings from that carrier WASP radar, then we can...
spacecraft will slow down to about 200 miles an hour just before main chute opening.
I think we said on broadcast the other day the closest we've come yet is about 6.5 kilometers from from the recovery ship. Two flights came within just about that area, didn't they?
I think it was quite close, at least 5 miles, I think, that close.
No,
There's quite a bet out here between Frank Borman and Wally Schirra on who can come closest to the carrier as they re-enter. Schirra in Gemini 6, who is 13 statute miles away, or Borman, who is trying to come even closer.
Elliott C has put in a call, advised that we're standing by for their main chute report. We've not heard.
Of course, Schirra is one of the two who did come close on his first flight.
Let's stand by for that main chute opening, which should come up, it should have happened by now. We haven't gotten confirmation again of that. The spacecraft was descending at about, let me make a quick reading here on my slide rule. They said about 200 miles an hour. How many... feet or kilometers per hour would that be before main chute opening, Mr. Harper?
Foreman says the main chute is out and it looks okay.
Very good.
Main chute out and looks okay.
About 3 minutes to splashdown now, right, Red?
Yes. That means that the spacecraft is now less than 10,000 feet above the surface of the Earth.
Less than 10,000. All right, let's convert that as quickly as possible. That way,
Eddie, can do that for you.
About 3,000 meters above the Earth. Less than 3,000 meters from the surface of the water.
Huh? We're predicting splash now in about 3 minutes from now.
There's your answer, Hal.
Thirty
control.
Five and about what? 30 seconds. It's about right. Yeah.
We're expecting that at 5 minutes past the hour and 10 seconds at 14:05:10 GMT. If any of you are watching an accurate clock, wherever you may be listening.
By the way,
the tension is really released at this point too, because once that main parachute opening opens, you know that the spacecraft is going to descend at a slow
as well as they are in the proper landing attitude.
And that's part of it, in the proper landing attitude, and will soon splash into the ocean. And at that point, they should be perfectly safe.
Assume the carrier wasp is all decked out with signs, seasons, greetings,
welcome,
spirit of 76, welcome, Borman and Lovell, and so on.
It's really interesting for our listeners that we are watching on what's happening on the carrier wasp by television monitors from thousands of miles away. I'm about 2,000 miles from that carrier here in Houston, Texas, and you, Hal Banks, there in Washington, at least 1,000 miles up the Atlantic from that point. Thanks to Early Bird Satellite, we can watch this.
I wonder if the carrier might be able to
sight this one. Have you heard any Airbus 1 plane upraised from the WASP has a visual sighting on the spacecraft, still on main chute?
That's
me. That's the answer. That's great. They came in on cue. FDR Airbus 1, commander craft north of the WASP, some 15 miles, says that they have a visual sighting.
North some 15 miles of the WASP. Now, that's Mr. Haney reporting that. That's not an accurate report of exactly where the spacecraft is in relation to the aircraft carrier. We're merely estimating the point at which this airplane is flying, some 15 nautical miles north of the carrier. So that is an estimate. It appears, though, that the spacecraft is a little short rather than a little long, doesn't it?
It would seem so. We should be hearing from the WASP fairly soon, shouldn't we, Bob, if they do get a visual sighting?
Yes, Bill, I'm sure that they'll be on the air immediately if they do have a visual sighting from the ship itself. About 10 seconds.
10.
10 seconds to splashdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Splash.
I could almost hear it.
If according to schedule.
Well, so far it has been.
Right, you're exactly right.
We
this
have
is
a splash.
Amazing.
Airbus. Airbus 1.
There it is.
Thank you, Mr. Haney.
Again, would someone define Airbus 1 for me?
All right.
I'm sorry, the transmission was garbled. Now the advisor is standing by to mark the splash.
That is a small two-engine airplane which took off
for 5 minutes, 36 seconds past the hour.
Airbus is as far as a controller only took off from the carrier.
Now we have confirmation on splash. Airbus 1 says the sheep jettison normal and almost directly overhead.
Wonderful. That's Commander David Barksdale of the Navy.
The search and recovery helicopters are being vectored to the scene.
I still...
We'll explain that when we get more time.
Yeah. Someone will have to explain to me sometime how you can sit down here on the ground and hours ahead of time estimate within seconds, split seconds almost.
You know what? Well, going to touch down. It seems deceptively simple. And you think sometimes when we come in on an ordinary plane here in the United States, we circle for hours and maybe an hour late or something.
The plane leaves on time and lands on time is within a half hour. It's not on time.
This thing doesn't depend on the weather, though, does it?
We don't have an air traffic problem in this case.
Everybody gets out of the way.
I think it's really thanks to those million-dollar computers, these large 7094, these big transistorized.
Airbus 1 is in loud and clear communication with 7 on the water. These communications are not being relayed back here, but we've been told several times that they do have this communication.
One of the reasons this aircraft is called Air Boss is because he can talk directly with the spacecraft through radio on board the airplane.
Right, here's a report from the ship, Dallas Townsend. Let's take that.
9:05 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right on schedule, and Air Boss can
station collar under the spacecraft to ensure that the spacecraft is not sunk. And that sunk depth, I believe now, checking on this, at 330 hours and some 35 minutes of flight time.
7 miles south and 10 to 15 miles west of the aiming point.
That's Paul Haney in Gemini Control giving us more information as it's coming into Houston here. 7 miles.
Did you assign that one at all? 7 miles south and 10 to 15 miles
west.
Again, they have flown 8,500,000 kilometers since they lifted off on December 4th.
The helicopter is over the spacecraft.
That's one of these large jet-propelled rescue helicopters.
Here's a report now from Werner Eisen aboard the ship. Let's take this.
2-7 report. They are in fine shape. They have, however, requested that they be picked up from their Gemini 7 spacecraft by helicopter. The spacecraft is in the water just about 12 miles from the Wasp at this moment. We are steaming towards it at almost great speed. There will, however, be a helicopter retrieval of the pilots who have requested that they come aboard that way. The Air Boss, the on-scene commander, is flying an orbital pattern over the spacecraft, so everything looks just fine, and we can almost make it out. Just on the horizon now, the first wisps of the smoke flowers going up from the breeze, just off the horizon. Rescue 1 helicopter with a solar support is expected over the spacecraft in about just 2 minutes from now. And now the swim team, led by Lieutenant J.G. Christopher Bent, will go out of the helicopter and into the water, secure the communications telephone from the astronauts and arrange for them to be lifted up into the aircraft. We're just down the flag bridge now, says we should
we're clearing out to perimeter 87 level position, and we can see just off of the distance.
The smoke billowing out west.
And the three helicopters.
All three recovery helicopters.
Oh, a bit of noise there. The wind blowing into the microphones of our correspondents aboard the primary recovery ship, the aircraft carrier Watt. Yep. Splashdown is, as they reported, 12 nautical miles from the ship. That would be almost precisely the same distance that the Gemini 6 spacecraft splashed down on Thursday, about 22 kilometers away from the ship. But unlike astronauts Shira and Stafford on the Gemini 6, Frank Borman and James Lovell apparently have elected to be hoisted out of the spacecraft and up into a helicopter to return to the ship a little more quickly, perhaps 20 or 30 minutes sooner than if they had stayed aboard the spacecraft.
I think I know why, Bob. I can see white caps out there in the Atlantic. The sea was much calmer, I believe, on Thursday. The wind seems to be blowing up a bit now. Plus the fact that these men have been up there for 14 days, and I imagine the atmosphere inside the spacecraft is less than desirable.
For a shower and a shave. I noticed that while we were getting that report from the carrier, here in Houston, the mission controllers were watching on the television. I also see the smoke flare from the
helicopter number one, designated Search One, is making its approach on the spacecraft. It is piloted by Lieutenant Roger McPherson, his hometown, Reno, Nevada.
I gather that bad weather you had in Houston a couple of days ago is on its way now, Rhett, and
that's right.
The Gemini 7 craft
has been dropped to the swimmers in the water. It's being inflated.
We have been listening to Mr. Haney's continuing commentary here also. Some of the same information you heard from Dallas Townsend and Bernard Eisman there on the carrier.
Rhett?
Yes.
Has Paul Haney announced an official splashdown point? Yeah, we heard from those correspondents that they thought it was about 12 nautical miles or about 22 kilometers.
Yes, he gave us 10 nautical miles, which would be 18 kilometers.
Oh, that's even better than the Shira Stafford splashdown on Thursday.
We'll see that, of course, again, see, these are estimates.
The life rafts have been inflated, and one swimmer is standing on the collar, leaning against the spacecraft.
We also have a coordinate here. I see 25 degrees, 40 minutes approximately, north. And I believe we are 70 degrees and about 30 minutes west. I'm not sure of that longitudinal line, looking at the recovery map on our television monitor from Mission Control. You can see, of course, those two search and rescue helicopters standing by. And I'm not at all surprised that Frank Borman and Jim Lovell have elected to be taken out of the spacecraft by helicopter so that they can get back to the ship as quickly as possible.
This is Houston. The Watch now advises they're about 6 miles from the scene, 6 miles from the spacecraft.
About 11 kilometers away, within visual sight.
The smoke flare is within visual sight, and long-range lenses on those TV cameras are picking up the image of the smoke as it floats away.
It's quite as sharp a picture as there was the other day, and if it's a little bit hazy, although still an excellent television picture on the studio quality here at the moment, yes. Shots of the Wasp at any rate.
A low pressure area is moving from the northeast down into these primary recovery areas. The weather this time isn't moving directly from Houston, but a long rainy frontal system over here has moved southeast, and another low pressure area from the northeast has come south right down over the prime recovery area, according to our weathermen here in Houston.
Bob Lodge, do we have any further reports from the Wasp now? Yes, we're still getting this running commentary from correspondents Bernard Eisman and Dallas Townsend. Haven't for a couple of minutes anyhow received any new word from what they call Flag Quad. That's the Admiral's Bridge, where they're keeping in very close touch with both the spacecraft, the search aircraft above it, the helicopter here.
The wind is a little bit brisker than the wind while it's around. Every day, between 8